But as for me, my feet had almost slipped. I had nearly lost my foothold, for I envied the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. They have no struggles. Their bodies are healthy and strong. They are free from the burdens common to man. They are not plagued by human ills. Therefore, pride is their necklace. They clothe themselves with violence. From their callous hearts comes iniquity. The evil conceits of their minds know no limits. They scoff and speak with malice. In their arrogance, they threaten oppression. Their mouths lay claim to heaven, and their tongues take possession of the earth. Therefore, their people turn to them and drink up waters in abundance. They say, "How can God know? Does the Most High have knowledge?" This is what the wicked are like, always carefree. They increase in wealth. Surely in vain have I kept my heart pure. In vain have I washed my hands in innocence. All day long I have been plagued. I have been punished every morning. If I had said, "I will speak thus," I would have betrayed your children. When I tried to understand all this, it was oppressive to me, till I entered the sanctuary of God. Then I understood their final destiny. Surely you place them on slippery ground. You cast them down to ruin. How suddenly are they destroyed, completely swept away by terrors. As a dream when one awakes, so when you arise, O Lord, you will despise them as fantasies. When my heart was grieved and my spirit embittered, I was senseless and ignorant. I was a brute beast before you. Yet I am always with you. You hold me by my right hand. You guide me with your counsel, and afterwards you will take me into glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Those who are far from you will perish. You destroy all who are unfaithful to you. But as for me, it is good to be near God. I have made the sovereign Lord my refuge. I will tell of all your deeds. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks very much, Alex. That was beautifully read. Morning, everyone.
Morning.
I've got a poem for you this morning to start with, but I should warn you, it's not Wordsworth. Here he goes. The rain, it raineth on the just, and also on the unjust fella, but mainly on the just, because the unjust nicked the just's umbrella. Why do good things happen to bad people? And why do bad things happen to good people? Why is life so flipping unfair? We say we believe in a God of love and a God of justice, but where is the love and where is the justice? We're going to be having a look at some of those questions this morning. And please note that I say we're going to be having a look at those questions, not we're going to be definitively answering those questions. These are questions that philosophers and theologians of all faiths and none have wrestled with through the millennia. And they haven't come up with any definitive answers yet, so as highly as I think of myself, it seems unlikely that I'm going to this morning. But nonetheless, it is right to wrestle with these things, because these questions are real, and they're raw, and they're relevant. Just last week, Someone who came to one of the lunches that we put on over the summer said to me, "I'd like to believe in God, but I just can't believe in a God who lets bad things happen to good people." So these questions are relevant. They are, however, not new. They've been being asked for centuries, as we can see from the psalm that Alex just read to us. This is the psalm number 73, and it's written, or at least attributed to, a chap called Asaph. And I like Asaph because I feel like I can relate to a bit, because we shared a job title. So at some point, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago or so, I was the director of music or worship pastor for a church in Canterbury. And so my job was to look after the musicians and the singers and the tech team, to make sure that they were being supported and encouraged, to make sure that the rotas were filled, to make sure that musical worship happened at all our services, and where appropriate, to write songs or to facilitate the writing of songs for that particular context. And that is pretty much what Asaph did. He was the director of music. The only differences were that he did his about 3,000 years ago, that he was the director of music for the courts of King David and King Solomon, and that his job wasn't quite as impressive as mine because he didn't have a tech team to worry about. Now, Asaph had this job, and he was, you know, he was by no means in poverty, but he also wasn't one of the wealthiest people in the nation. He wasn't someone who had no influence, but he definitely wasn't one of the most powerful people around. He wasn't a nobody, but he also wasn't one of the elite. He had a good job, lived a good life, but there were people around him who seemed to be living much better lives. I guess it might be that he was fairly similar to many of us here today. And that context is important because Asaph was struggling. He was really struggling. He begins the psalm by trying really hard to be positive. Bless his little heart. He said, God, you are good to Israel. But it doesn't take long before he's having a bit of a whinge. In fact, it's only the second verse. And he says, "My feet had almost stumbled. My steps had almost slipped." It paints for me a picture of someone walking along a mountain path with precipices on either side and being battered by the wind and the rain and the feet almost stumbling, almost slipping, just clinging on to that path for dear life. He's really struggling. Not because he's ill, or because someone he knows is. Not because he hasn't got enough money. Not because he's struggling with his faith per se. But because he looks at the world around him and he thinks, it is so unfair. Why do all these people, loads of whom, frankly, I think are wicked or evil or bad, why is it that they're living a better life than me? Why is it that they've got bigger houses and faster chariots and prettier wives? It's not fair. Why do good things happen to bad people? And we might also go on from that. Why do bad things happen to good people? So what I want to do this morning is two things. I want to look at that question of why, and as I've said, this isn't going to be a definitive answer, but I can let you know where I've got to in my thinking, and it might help you to think about where you are in your thinking, even if you end up thinking something completely different. That's perfectly okay. And then I want to go on to think about, regardless of what the answer is to that, if we are struggling with these kind of questions, how do we get through that? How do we get to a point where we are living a life that is both fulfilled and fulfilling? So first of all then, why? We believe in a God of love, and a God of justice. So why do good things happen to bad people? Why do bad things happen to good people? And why is life so unfair? I start everything with my belief that God is love. Not that he is a bit loving, or even very loving, but rather that he is love. That is who he is. That is an innate part of his character. He is love. Everything for me begins with that belief. So therefore, if God is love, I don't believe that he can be controlling. Because to be controlling is not to be loving. You can't be both loving and controlling. Now, there may be some of us here today who have wrestled with being in relationships which seem to be loving and controlling, but I just don't believe it's possible to have a truly loving relationship where one part of that relationship completely controls the other part of that relationship. It's just not love. I don't seek to control my wife or my children. It's probably a good thing because I wouldn't have a chance. You can't have a loving relationship where one party is controlling the others. And so because God is love, he chooses not to control us. And the great news of that is that we have freedom and we have choice. The bad news is that we have freedom and we have choice. And we quite often make bad choices and use our freedom unwisely. But if God were to control everything, then we wouldn't be able to love him. We would just be robots, and it wouldn't be any kind of relationship to speak of. So therefore, because God is love, because he therefore can't be controlling, that means that we get to choose. And that sometimes we make good choices and good things happen, and sometimes we make bad choices and bad things happen. Sometimes we make good choices and bad things still happen, and sometimes we make bad choices and good things still happen. And that does seem unfair. It does seem unjust. But I think better to have it that way and to have a loving relationship with a God who is love than for it all to be perfectly fair and perfectly just, but for us to be robots and for God not to be able to be truly love. I don't know whether that theology makes sense to you, but it really makes sense to me. And it means that I have to accept, therefore, that life is unfair, that things are unjust, because it's more important that God is love. I'll be really interested to chat with you afterwards, and you can come and let me know whether you think that's wonderful or a load of baloney. Either's absolutely fine. But that's where I've got to in my thinking. So, regardless of where we are with that, in the knowledge that we don't have all the answers to these big questions, how do we get to a point of being able to work through them to a place where we are fulfilled and hopeful and peaceful? And I want to go back into the psalm at this point, because I think as we look through the psalm, there's a really helpful journey that Asaph goes on that we might go on as well. And the way we're going to look at this is by looking at the predominant pronouns that Asaph uses in various bits of the Psalms. So pronouns are things like I, me, we, you, etc., etc. And of course, pronouns are a lot in the news at the moment, both people choosing what pronouns they want to have. So here's a little joke for you. What pronouns should a chocolate bar use? Hershey. It's rubbish, isn't it? Sorry, it's not a good joke, but I've been a bit encouraged this week by the jokes that have come out of the Edinburgh Fringe. Have you seen those? Did you see the top 10 jokes from the Edinburgh Fringe this year? They were rubbish. Absolutely rubbish. Here's the best one. Voted the best joke of the Fringe this year by Masai Graham, I think. This is the best joke. I tried to steal some spaghetti from a shop, but the female guard saw me and I couldn't get pasta. frankly, if that's the best that the professionals can come up with, I'm not going to feel bad about doing bad jokes about Hershey's. So anyway, we're thinking about pronouns. And in the first part of the psalm, Asaph predominantly uses the pronoun they. So he begins these first 12 verses by going, but they do this and they do that, but nonetheless, they have this and they have that. It's a full-on whinge, and it's so easy to be sucked into that, isn't it? It's so easy to look around at the people around us and feel jealous, especially if we think that good things are happening to bad people. It's so easy to look at the they, to live in the they. I find myself doing it. I was listening to a podcast the other day called Tailenders, which is one of my favourite podcasts. It's a loosely cricket-based podcast, and Jimmy Anderson, one of the greatest bowlers of all time, was telling a story. He's one of my heroes. And he was talking about hanging out backstage at a Coldplay gig. Backstage was James Anderson, one of the greatest bowlers of all time. Chris Martin, the lead singer of Coldplay, one of the greatest songwriters of all time. Hanging out with them was Stormzy, one of the greatest rappers of all time. Also with them was Isha Guha. If you don't know her, she's a fantastic women's cricketer, brilliant commentator, and if you're interested, also absolutely gorgeous. Don't worry, Tors does know. Hanging out with them was Mick Jagger, he of the puffed up lips and the swinging hips. And then to top it all off was 90s pop star and Neighbours legend, Natalie Imbruglia. Presumably at this point, not lying naked on the floor. Which is a joke that only those of you who know anything about 90s pop will get. So the rest of you, you're just going to have to work that one out. So in this room, hanging out, just the elite of the sporting world and the musical world, and I thought to myself, well, why aren't I hanging out with them? I'd fit in brilliantly with them. I know three chords on the guitar. I know my deep backward square from my silly mid-off. I would fit in perfectly there. But instead, I'm hanging out with Clive and Liz. It's wonderful hanging out with Clive and Liz, I should say. But it's so easy to look around and be jealous of what's going on for others. But it is completely self-defeating. And actually, even though this feels a bit harder to say, it's also not really advisable to be looking around at the good people who we know and love and who are really struggling and to kind of obsess about why bad things happen to good people. That's not helpful either. Actually, we need to move from that phase. And so for Asaph, he moves from living in the they to starting to live in the I. So in the second part of the psalm, from verse 13 to verse 17, he begins to use the word I a lot. And he starts off by using it in a way where he's just feeling really sorry for himself. He's feeling really depressed and a bit down about all the bad things that happened to him, and it's not really fair. But then he begins to take a bit of responsibility. And so he says, I will come to your sanctuary, O God. So he begins to take responsibility for what's going on in his thought life. I will come to you, O God. And that's the first step that we need to take if we're going to do this. We need to take some responsibility. We need to move away from thinking about the they, start thinking about ourselves, and then coming to God. And so then in the third part of the psalm, from verse 18 onwards, the predominant pronoun that Asaph uses is you, meaning God. So he moves from the they to I to you. And I think we can learn from that journey. When we're struggling with these big questions of life, we need to not get stuck within the questions, but instead turn to God, come to him in worship and prayer and Bible study. It's why church and small groups and engaging with one another in holy conversations is so important. So as we come to God in worship and in prayer and in study, and as we seek to hear from him, our perspective begins to change. Now I've got to say, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with quite how Asaph's perspective changes in this psalm. Because actually, he seems to feel much more peaceful when he's saying things like, God, you're going to destroy all those wicked people. They're going to perish. Oh, good, that's all right then. Now, actually, I'm not sure how helpful that is. I don't find that helpful myself. We need to recognize that Asaph wrote this 3,000 years ago. Things were a bit different back then. Actually, I'm not sure that that's a particularly helpful way of thinking. I'm not sure that's exactly how God feels about people who do bad things. And yet, it is important to say that I believe in a God of justice. Now, justice is a good word. Justice is a word of fairness, of impartiality. Now, we might live in a world that is unfair, but God is a God of justice, and he is drawing us to a place of justice. And so we will be, each of us, held to account for the things that we say and do and think. Exactly how God's going to do that, well, I'm not sure any of us know. But actually, the trajectory of history is God bringing all things to himself. And that means that there will be justice. It's really easy for us to become kind of sucked under the things that are going on in our lives, to look around and feel completely overwhelmed by them. And that's understandable, because that's our perspective. But as we come to God in worship and prayer, we begin to get a glimpse, just a glimmer of his perspective. And he is the Alpha and the Omega. He sees the beginning from the end. So as we come to him, we get a glimmer of that. And it helps change our perspective. It helps us to come out from under those things that are bearing us down and to see it at least to some degree from God's perspective. So we move from the they to the I to the you. And then at the very end of this psalm, Asaph uses both I and you, both talking about himself and about God. So I guess we could say there that we're into us. We're into us, me and God. There's a beautiful verse in verse 23 where Asaph says, "But I am always with you, and you take me by my right hand." I love that verse. For me, it paints a picture of a small child walking along a road with their hand being held by their mother or by their father. It's an image of safety, of fun. I picture the child kind of skipping along a little bit, of conversation, and also of journey. I love that image. And that's where Asaph finds himself. And you know, by the end of the psalm, Asaph feels much more peaceful, much more hopeful. But nothing in his life has changed. He hasn't suddenly got a whole load more than he thought he had. And all those wicked people haven't suddenly been brought low. And all those good people haven't suddenly been, you know, good things happening to them. So the actual situations haven't changed, but Asaph's perspective has changed. I think the way for us to work through these kind of struggles that we might have is not to expect definitive answers, and also not to expect that suddenly everything will be exactly the way we think it should be, but rather that we can find peace in the presence of our God. The very last verse says, "But it is, as for me, it is good to be near God. I will take refuge in you and tell of your wonderful deeds." That, I think, is how we move on. Because in the end, it's not getting more stuff that makes us happy. We know that because actually, lots of those people who we look around and feel jealous of, well, they're not happy either. They've got all sorts of stuff going on in their lives. Actually, if we want to be peaceful and hopeful, it's about being in a relationship with our living, risen, creator, savior, God. That's where we find hope. That's where we find fulfillment. So, if you're struggling with some of those big questions of life, it's completely understandable. But perhaps this week we might move from living in the they through living in the I to focusing on you and then finally to us, me and God, being held by my hand and taken forward on the journey that God has for me, because that way fulfillment lies. Amen.